This is Artificially Intelligent News. I'm Mark Ellison. It's Tuesday, September 1st, 2026. This program is AI created and fact-checked. Here is a calm look at the developments shaping the day. The Supreme Court has allowed construction to continue for now on President Trump's proposed White House ballroom and military complex project while the underlying legal challenge proceeds. The court's apparent 5-4 order blocks a lower court halt on much of the work. Chief Justice John Roberts dissented with the court's three liberal justices. He wrote that the project is likely unlawful because Congress has not approved it. The administration says the project would provide a more secure setting for large events and shield a planned underground military installation. The National Trust for Historic Preservation argues the work changes a historic national landmark without the required approval. The order does not decide whether the project is ultimately legal. That question returns to the lower courts. For now, the practical effect is limited but important. The administration may keep building while the lawsuit moves forward, rather than waiting for a final ruling before work resumes. The administration has described a roughly 90,000-square-foot ballroom and military complex costing $400 million, with completion targeted for the summer of 2028. The dispute therefore remains about both the project's legal authority and the approval process for altering a nationally significant site. The eventual lower court decisions can still determine whether the work was lawful. In a separate development at the Pentagon, Army Secretary Dan Driscoll is stepping down after about 18 months in the job. The White House confirmed the resignation Monday but gave no reason. An Army official said Driscoll spoke with President Trump about the state of the Army and submitted his resignation. Reports of tension between Driscoll and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth have circulated for months, but neither the White House nor Driscoll publicly attributed the departure to those reports. Driscoll is an Iraq war veteran and former technology investor who had pushed Army drone modernization and took on an unusual role in efforts to support negotiations over Russia's war in Ukraine. His departure follows other senior changes in Army and Pentagon leadership. No successor was announced in the White House statement. That leaves the Army awaiting clarity on who will take over and whether its modernization priorities will continue on the same timetable. The White House confirmation established the change, but it did not provide a transition plan or name an acting replacement. In Chicago, police are investigating a mass shooting at a gathering in Washington Park on the city's south side. Authorities say one man was killed and 14 other people were injured after gunfire erupted late Saturday as officers were trying to disperse a crowd near South Cottage Grove Avenue. The Cook County Medical Examiner identified the man who died as 35-year-old Rontonio Gutierrez. Investigators say the gunfire came from an unknown person or group. Early reports varied as additional victims were identified. The latest police count reported by local outlets is one person dead and 14 injured. No public announcement of arrests or a motive had been made by this morning. The changing injury count reflects the difficulty of establishing the full scope of a large, fast-moving scene in its immediate aftermath. Investigators are still working from the available evidence and witness information, with no public account yet identifying who fired the shots. New York City is also dealing with the aftermath of a fatal attack in Times Square. Police say a woman carrying two knives stabbed two people Monday afternoon in what officials described as a random and unprovoked attack near West 42nd Street and 7th Avenue. A 32-year-old woman later died at a hospital. A 68-year-old man was critically injured but later stabilized, according to officials. Officers confronted the suspect near a Times Square police substation after deploying a taser. Police then shot her. She died from her injuries. The investigation is continuing, and authorities have not publicly established a motive. Officials' description of the attack as random is based on the information available so far. That makes the remaining investigative questions especially significant, including what led to the attack and whether there was any connection between the suspect and the two victims. In Arizona, the search and recovery effort continues after a deadly flash flood in the Grand Canyon. Officials say two people have been found dead and one person remains unaccounted for after Saturday's flooding in the Bright Angel Creek area. About 80 people were rescued. Rangers used helicopters, night vision equipment, permit records, and vehicle plates to help determine who might still be missing. The flooding damaged the only water pipeline serving the canyon. Park officials barred visitors from staying at lodges and hotels inside Grand Canyon National Park and imposed emergency water restrictions for year-round residents. More rain remained possible in the area Monday and Tuesday during the region's monsoon season. Visitors should follow park closures and flash flood warnings closely. The damage to that single pipeline makes the emergency more than a search and rescue operation. Water service is essential to daily life and visitor facilities inside the canyon, so the restrictions and lodge closures are part of the park's effort to manage a difficult recovery while conditions remain unsettled. Florida is scheduled to carry out its 14th execution of the year today, the highest annual total in the country. The state plans to execute a man convicted of fatally shooting a 16-year-old girl who had rejected his romantic advances and wounding two of her friends. The execution is one of three lethal injections Florida has scheduled this month. The case is another marker in a year of unusually frequent executions in the state. The scheduled execution would extend an already exceptional annual pace. As with any execution date, the plan remains subject to the legal process and any action by the courts before it is carried out. And in Las Vegas, a jury has returned the first conviction in the 30-year-old killing of rapper Tupac Shakur. Dwayne Kefe D. Davis was found guilty Monday of murder with the use of a deadly weapon. Prosecutors said Davis orchestrated the September 1996 shooting, though he was not accused of firing the fatal shots. Jurors deliberated for less than 3 hours after a weeks-long trial. Davis had pleaded not guilty. His defense argued that his past statements about the killing were boastful and unreliable. Davis told the judge he intends to appeal. Sentencing is still ahead and he could face life in prison. The verdict does not erase the long unsolved nature of Shakur's death or the loss felt by his family and fans. It does bring a court judgment in one of the most enduring cases in modern American music history. The appeal Davis described is a separate stage from the jury's verdict. For now, the conviction establishes the trial court's finding, while sentencing and any later appellate proceedings will determine what comes next in the case. Overseas now, where the U.S.-Iran conflict has again raised the stakes around the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. military struck Iranian rocket launchers Sunday, saying they were being prepared to launch mines into the strategic waterway. Iran responded with missiles aimed at U.S. sites in Jordan. U.S. officials said those missiles were intercepted. Iranian officials have also said a supertanker was struck by mines in the strait. The claim has not been independently confirmed. What is clear is that shipping through the waterway remains sharply disrupted. Before the war, the strait carried roughly a fifth of the world's oil shipments. That scale helps explain why developments there are watched far beyond the region. The Strait of Hormuz is a narrow passage between the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman. An interruption there affects the movement of oil headed to world markets. Even when vessels are not physically damaged, disruption, risk, and delays can affect the price of moving energy. The renewed exchange ended more than a month without major fighting between the two sides. It also underscores the difficulty of turning a six-month conflict into a durable ceasefire. Regional governments continue to press for diplomacy and for safe passage for commercial shipping. For Americans, the immediate effects are visible in oil prices, gasoline costs, and uncertainty in financial markets. The competing accounts should also be kept distinct. The U.S. has described its strike as aimed at launchers it said were preparing to lay mines. Iran has made the supertanker claim, but it has not been independently confirmed. The broader shipping disruption, however, is already affecting the economic picture. In Ukraine, Russian forces launched a large overnight aerial attack on and around Kyiv and the Odessa region. Ukrainian authorities said at least 11 people were killed and more than a dozen wounded, including children. Ukraine's Air Force said Russia used ballistic cruise and anti-radar missiles along with more than 200 drones and decoys. The attack followed several days of sustained air raid alerts in the capital. The casualty figures are preliminary and could change as rescue crews work through damaged areas. Russia has not offered a public accounting matching Ukraine's description of the strikes. The reported mix of missiles, drones, and decoys illustrates the scale Ukrainian air defenses were responding to overnight, but the immediate focus remains the rescue work and the people in damaged areas, where officials may revise the casualty count as more information becomes available. One additional disaster update deserves a brief mention. Flooding and landslides near the Nepal-China border have killed more than 900 people, according to the latest reports, with thousands still missing. Rescue operations are being complicated by damaged roads, mudslides, and concern over people believed trapped near hydropower tunnels. Turning to the economy, these are final closes from Monday, August 31st, the most recent completed U.S. trading session. U.S. markets are open today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 374.09 points, or 0.7%, to close at 53,185.90. The S&P 500 lost 25.62 points, or 0.3%, to to finish at 7,686.14. The NASDAQ Composite slipped 31.53 points, or 0.1%, closing at 26,370.89. Those were final closing values, not futures or intraday readings. All three major indexes still finished August higher overall. The immediate market story is the return of geopolitical and inflation pressure. Brent crude settled above $90 a barrel after the U.S. strike on Iranian launchers. The 10-year Treasury yield rose to about 4.75%. Higher energy prices can feed through to fuel, shipping, and household costs, while higher yields raise borrowing costs for consumers and businesses. Markets were therefore weighing two related pressures at once: the risk that higher oil prices could add to inflation and the effect of higher long-term yields on financing costs. Neither point alone determines the direction of stocks, but together they help explain the cautious final session of the month. That is also making the Federal Reserve's path more difficult. AP reported that inflation remains above the Fed's 2% target while the job market has weakened. The Labor Department's August employment report is due later this week. Investors will be watching it for evidence on whether slowing hiring or still high prices becomes the dominant concern for policymakers. In sports, Lionel Messi has announced that he is retiring from international soccer with Argentina. The 39-year-old said the decision hurt deeply, but that the time had come. He ends a 21-year national team career with 207 appearances and 125 goals for Argentina. Those are national records. Messi led Argentina to the 2022 World Cup and Copa America titles in 2021 and 2024. He also played in a record-tying 6 World Cups, including this summer's tournament in the United States, Mexico, and Canada, where Argentina lost the final to Spain in extra time. Those records put numbers to a career that covered more than 2 decades and several generations of Argentine teams. The World Cup and Copa America titles are central to why his international career will be measured not only by longevity, but by the championships Argentina won with him as captain. He says he will continue at club level with Inter Miami. The decision closes one of international soccer's defining careers while leaving Major League Soccer with one of its biggest stars. Argentina, meanwhile, must begin the practical transition away from a player who was both its leading scorer and its longtime on-field leader. At the U.S. Open, Novak Djokovic's future is a major question after the earliest Grand Slam exit of his career. The 39-year-old lost his first-round match Sunday night to Argentina's Mariano Navoni in 5 sets. It was Djokovic's first opening-round loss at the U.S. Open and his earliest loss at a major in 2 decades. Djokovic has a men's record 24 Grand Slam singles titles but has gone 3 years without winning a major. He has dealt with a right shoulder injury and other health problems this year. He has not announced retirement, and he has said that when healthy, he believes he can still compete with the best players. But the loss adds uncertainty to how much longer the last active member of tennis's Big Three will play. An opening round defeat does not by itself settle that question. It does, though, add a notable result to a season already shaped by health concerns and a long wait for another major title. A quick scoreboard from Monday. In baseball, the Mets beat the Rays 3-2. The Red Sox edged the Mariners 9-8 in 10 innings. The Phillies beat the Diamondbacks 2-1 to finish August with 21 wins. The Twins routed the Tigers 11-1, and the Cubs overwhelmed the Brewers 17-3. The Phillies' August total provides some context for that 2-1 result. While the Red Sox-Mariners game was the only one of these 5 to require extra innings, those are final results from the final day of August. At the U.S. Open, Carlos Alcaraz returned from a 4-month right wrist absence and beat Roman Safelin in straight sets. Defending women's champion Aryna Sabalenka opened with a straight sets win over Camila Osorio. Those are notable results from a busy first week in New York. Finally, in entertainment, singer D4VD, whose legal name is David Anthony Burke, entered a new not guilty plea Monday in the Los Angeles case involving the death of 14-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez. At the same hearing, Burke's private attorneys withdrew and a lawyer from the Los Angeles County Public Defender's Office took over his representation. The reason for the private lawyer's departure was not made public. Prosecutors have charged Burke with murder, continuous lewd and lascivious acts with a child under 14, and unlawful mutilation of human remains. He denies the charges. A judge previously found there was sufficient evidence for the case to go to trial. A status conference is set for October 19th. As always, the charges are allegations, and the case will be decided in court. The new plea keeps Burke's position unchanged as the case proceeds. The change in lawyers is part of the case's current procedural status, not a public explanation of why the private attorneys withdrew. That is the morning briefing. the renewed danger around the Strait of Hormuz, a consequential Supreme Court order, deadly violence and flooding at home, an important market week, and landmark moments in music and sports. Follow Artificially Intelligent News and share this briefing with one person who would value a calm morning news summary. I'm Mark Ellison. Thanks for listening, and take care.